He destroyed Miami this last week. I don't have his stats in front of me, but had a great game. And Cristobal was kind of talking about the game afterwards and said, "Yeah, Trey Benson, he's a guy we had at Oregon. He's really good. Like that's proof that this program here in Miami is going somewhere." It's like, is it? Are you just kind of trying to take credit where you can get it and just trying to deflect a little bit? I just
Yeah, and
thought that
like
was hilarious.
failing to mention that he didn't stay at Oregon, and like it was like
He played at Oregon.
the picture.
So fantastic, better not catch you lacking. Back to back like traffic, got that jumper patent in my starter jacket, in my wrist like
hello and welcome to the Flock Pod. We are at hashtag 131 here in beautiful Chopper Base. I've got two-thirds of the Aviterior producers sleeping here on the office couch, the other one's out in the living room, so we'll see if there's any chaos that takes place between them. If you'd be so kind, please go find us on your favorite podcast streaming platform. Click the subscribe button. Give us the 5-star ratings. Get in there and give us a review. And if it's a 5-star review in particular on Apple or those iTunes, we may even give you a read here on the podcast. Also, please go find us on all of your favorite social media channels at The Flock Pod. You can find me at Coach Justin D on those same social media channels. Shane, tell them where you are.
You can find me at BartenderShane6 on Twitter and at WalkaFlockaShane6 on Instagram.
Felt good about that intro. Feel good. Bringing the energy today. Gotta up the energy just a little bit. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We've got a great podcast for you guys today. And of course, we are once again joined by our third Duck Migo, Mr. Duckswire himself, Zachary Neal. How you doing, sir?
I'm going to keep the energy up because I am fired up. This week, I mean, we are fully in Husky Hate Week. We're in the final stretch of the season. These next three games are gonna be incredible. Let's go. Let's get into it. Let's do this.
Give a dog a bone, baby. Let's get it this week. All right. So we are going to do our Colorado breakdown, of course. A little rumor mill talk, kind of break down some quotes that are hanging out there. Talk about those CFP rankings. Go deep on Husky Hate Week, you know, one of the best weeks of the football season. We're going to talk a little round ball also, as the men and women Ducks both got their seasons going yesterday. And of course, Duck Generate Corner. But first, let's talk about this just beatdown that took place in Boulder, because it wasn't a perfect game by the Ducks, but you take away one 80-yard pass play, and it basically would have checked off all the boxes that all three of us kind of discussed, you know, before this, you know, on last week's episode. So, Shane, I always love going to you. Let's get the bar vibes. Let's hear what your viewing experience was like there at good old Scribbles this week.
It was fairly mellow compared to the rest of the season. And I think that is kind of fair to say. I saw a little bit less people in the bar, but this game being on ESPN, it's more easily accessible on Sling and things like that, as well as people having it at home. But people were into it. It's definitely there was people engaged, but the excitement was kind of down. And I think that it kind of muted some of the issues that this Oregon team had early, as far as just like the sense of people. There wasn't really too much of a panic early with how poorly we've seen Colorado perform this year. But it was interesting to see Oregon kind of come out of the gates a little bit slower than we thought they would. Definitely the windy conditions are always interesting, because you can't really notice it on TV as much. It's just kind of like it happens. Well, when pom-poms start blowing around the field, then you get more of like a visual moniker of it. But yeah, it was an interesting slow start to the game. But I think the coaching staff did a good job to kind of pull them out and get some excitement just plugged into this game.
Yeah, shout out Noah for wearing the long loose sleeves, for getting us an idea of like actually how windy it was out there.
Right. Then the ref's pants, yeah.
Yeah, and the ref's pants kind of going around there for sure. All right, Zach, viewing experience. What are some of your first thoughts here?
This viewing experience was actually pretty different for me, because my wife had like a birthday brunch to go to. So I was actually on daddy duty like during the first half of this game. So luckily it wasn't really a game that, you know, you had to be completely locked in for every single play. I was able to, you know, keep an eye on it and make sure nothing crazy was happening. But You know, I was like you're saying, I was pretty impressed with what we saw from this team because, you know, they came right out and offensively, you know, pulling out those trick plays. I know they didn't call them trick plays because they're like, yeah, we run these in practice all the time. They're not trick plays. They're just, you know, part of our offense. So, and then defensively they looked really good outside of, like JD said, that 181 yard pass play, miscommunication and coverage that happens sometimes. You know, they made up for it in other ways. But one of my biggest takeaways from this game is I know we'll get into it a little bit later too, but I so much love when a coaching staff is just really upfront with the fan base and the media, because we saw Oregon, like I said, run some of those plays. And I think a lot of people were surprised that they kind of pulled out these cards from their sleeve and showed these trick plays when a lot of people would say, you know, maybe save those for next week against Washington or Utah or Oregon State. And they even said after the game, like, hey, we wanted to put all of this out there because now those teams have to prepare for that. Mm-hmm. You know, we could have saved it and surprised them with it. But, you know, we wanted to show them that, hey, we're capable of this. Try and stop it. So now Washington's spending time this week, you know, trying to account for Josh Connerly as the tight end in 14J, thinking about what to do when Nix hands the ball off to Irving, then runs the other way. It's stuff like that. And we kind of had an idea during the game that, oh, this might be what they're doing, just throwing a lot at them. And then Lanning came out after the game. He's like, no, that's exactly what we were doing. Now other teams have to prepare for that. So just the upfrontness about everything really, really impressed me.
And I thought sorry, Justin, you go ahead.
I was just going to say there's another layer to it also, just from a coaching perspective, getting kids excited to play a game against a team like Colorado and giving them something fun in practice. You imagine how excited those guys were to see Noah start getting some carries in practice and like everybody getting all fired up to see what he can do carrying the ball. So it's just those little cookies that we kind of talked about, and we expected this. We talked about this on last week's podcast that we may see some trickery just to try to get these guys fired up.
And to have, like, you know, you drop this play for Josh Connerly that you're going to run for him on his birthday. How do you not get the whole offense? I mean, just the whole team in general, just to be rallied around this moment for this guy, just because it's such a cool thing to do. And I mean, like Justin said, it makes the lead up to this game fun when these guys get to practice, and it just injects incitement into the process. When these are the weeks when the process can become kind of feels more like a job. You're kind of going through the motions. And we see a lot of teams in college football stumble. And what we talked about on last week's pod, if this team doesn't win by nearly 40 points, we're going to look at it as kind of a disappointment. So how do we make sure that everybody is locked in, engaged, and having fun? And I think that was the big thing, was that we saw this team. And I mean, we see Dan Lanning, you know, hugging Noah Sewell's a video I tweeted out earlier on the sideline, and both guys just smiling, just like, you see the enjoyment like oozing out of these guys on the sideline when you're playing potentially the worst team in college football. It can be a not fun trip, you know? So it's, and we've seen teams, you know, stumble going into Colorado too, sometimes just with elevation and stuff like that. And then you happen to be playing in a windstorm. You see this like in pro football all the time, where these bad teams beat good teams in these weird weather games. So I thought it was good. And just, I'm glad that you mentioned that, Justin, because that was it. It is a way to like really put your fingerprints on a game when it's a less quality opponent.
Well, and to me, it's proof that good old Coach Dillingham's listening to the flock pot, because we've been begging for Noah to get carries. So it's just proof of that. So yeah, let's look at this game a little bit deeper now. I mean, obviously the Ducks win 49-10, like you guys mentioned, pretty windy conditions. Didn't seem to affect Bo Nix terribly. I mean, 20 of 24, 274 yards and two touchdowns. Also got two more touchdowns on the ground. And of course, the aforementioned receiving touchdown, getting his Bo McCaffrey on out there for the Oregon Ducks. It's just, I don't know. I want to throw it to you guys, because I mean, again, it was a good game. I have some conflicted feelings still about the secondary, but what are some of your, you know, deeper takeaways from this game, Shane, as you look at this and look as we kind of go in here to Husky Hate Week?
Well, as you just mentioned, Bo Nix wasn't being slowed down by this wind. And it was so cool to watch this game, because Colorado kind of threw a bunch of different things at him. And my biggest takeaway is that there's no real good solution for Bo Nix at this point. Everything that a defense does, he kind of has a counterpoint. When, especially with let's not forget the offensive line giving him sometimes all day, and some of the blocking schemes that they were running were just so fun to watch. But when they, you know, they drop eight back in coverage and he's so patient that he can wait for something to happen or eventually use his athleticism, they blitz off the edges and he goes right up the middle. You know, they're blitzing inside and then you see the quick throws start coming out. So it's the composure with Bo. And I know that, you know, this isn't anything new. We've kind of talked about this ad nauseum, especially the last 3 or 4 weeks now. But to see in a game like this where it's just, I mean, it's something we talked about early in the season, just to completely control the game and to do it in all facets of the game, even, you know, even the receipt, like the catch that he had for the touchdown. It was a brilliant little kind of like two-step, I'm not doing anything, and then he's out there and he's in the flat and he's wide open. Nice touch from Bucky Irving too, we should mention that. But yeah, that was just my biggest takeaway, is Bo Nix is just, it seems like at this point he's almost seen everything. Yep. And I mean, if Colorado had any kind of advantage in this game, it was just going to be like pinning their ears back and getting after Oregon. They were just completely unable to do it.
There was this James Bond game you could play on the Nintendo GameCube where you could play like, and it was called Bond Mode, where you'd hold a button down and like everything slows down and you can like see like wind and stuff and like stuff coming at you. It's almost like having Spidey senses or whatever you want to call it. Bo Nix is playing like that right now. He's playing in Bond Mode. Everything's slowed down. He's seeing everything at a super slow speed, able to make the perfect decision. So Zach, same question here to you. What was one of your biggest deep takeaways from this game again, looking forward?
So I'm going to kind of go a little bit on the negative route here. I know this was a good game, a lot of good takeaways, but it was not a perfect game.
What I'm talking
game,
about.
You know, yeah, JD already mentioned, you know, there was problems in the secondary. I'll let him to get it a little bit more. One major thing going into Washington, Jamal Hill, you know, ejected for targeting. That was appealed, denied once again. We're going to miss him for the first half against Washington, which is a really big deal because Washington has the number one passing offense in the nation, and Jamal Hill's a big part of that secondary. But one really major thing for me is Oregon's pass rush is still struggling to get after the quarterback. I mean, I don't have the stat right in front of me, but Colorado, you know, they allow sacks. I mean, they definitely let people get after the quarterback, and the Ducks got zero sacks, had single-digit pressures on the day against JT Shroud, who's not a mobile quarterback. And, you know, that I know they didn't have DJ Johnson. He was out with injury. It looks like he's going to play this week. He was a full participant in practice today, so that's a good thing. But, you know, that's still just, if we're picking nits, that's one thing that I want to see get better for the Ducks, because Dorless is a game wrecker, especially in the run game. But him and DJ, they need to get after the quarterback a little bit more. So that's one thing where if you're finding places where this team can continue to get better as the season goes on, that's one thing where they really can take a big step up.
And I was impressed with what Keon Ware-Hudson was able to do in his snaps out there. He did make an impact on the game, but you're right. And I don't know if it was something that the Ducks did from like a schematic. You know, it didn't look like they were blitzing as much or running as many games up front as they did against, you know, UCLA or Cal for that matter, but it did seem more of like a simple pass rush. And without DJ out there and with Dorless, you know, kind of struggling, it looked like there through an injury also there, possibly, they just didn't have those game wreckers, you know, just with that front four. So yeah, I think that's definitely something to look forward to, because like you mentioned, we need to get pressure on Penix, not to say that we want to force him out of the pocket because he is a mobile guy, but we need to make him uncomfortable as much as possible. I can't believe it's taken us this long. I mean, Christian Gonzalez had himself a day with those two interceptions and his homecoming to Colorado. I can't imagine how good that felt, you know, just to make that kind of an impact and to make those kinds of plays there back at home. But it's going to fall a lot on his shoulders. It's going to fall a lot on Bridges' shoulders. I hope we see a little bit more man-to-man in regards to just trying to lock up with some of these Husky wide receivers and allow these DBs to really be aggressive. I don't want them in kind of a passive mindset against that type of look that Washington's going to be putting out there. So the more that we can get those DBs playing downhill as opposed to back on their heels. And again, Brian Addison played admirably out there when he did. Bennett Williams continues to be really good. Jeff Rabassa continues to be our best cover linebacker by far. So there's not, it's not like we don't have studs out there that make plays, But when you're then you start relying on guys like Dante Manning, when Jaleel Florence is starting to get out there and get some more reps, those are guys that just, those are some holes that Washington might look to expose. So that's something I'm really looking forward. Again, they played pretty well overall, just those, that one major explosive play, and then just some bigger chunk plays earlier in the game that I feel like they could have cut off a little bit better. But that's the main thing that I'm looking at, again, that they hope they tighten up this week in practice. Bucky Irving had himself another great day, 11 carries, 120 yards out there, just continues to be a stud. But I was excited to see Sean Dollars get out there and get some more carries also, some more of that two back set. And of course, we already mentioned, you know, Noah getting out there and getting that touchdown was very, very exciting. Anything else you guys want to touch on this Colorado game before we jump forward here into the rest of the podcast?
I do think that as poorly as Oregon did kind of play against the pass in that game, especially for that quality of opponent, they did an excellent job against the run, and they really stuffed things up in the middle there. There was some missed tackles early in the second half that we kind of saw them revert back to their old ways there for a little bit, but it seemed like they kind of nipped that in the bud. But yeah, I thought that up front, the guys did a good job, especially the interior defensive linemen. Swinson had a couple good plays. What's the other guy? I had his name.
Jordan Riley.
Yes, Jordan Riley. Yes, thank you. I thought they both had some excellent games, especially after, you know, some of that quote-unquote bulletin board material that offensive lineman for Colorado talking a little smack about that portion of the team. Interesting lion to wake up there, you know what I mean? You don't want to poke that bear. That's, I don't really get that one. But yeah, I did think that they did a great job stepping up to the plate there and really shutting that part of it down. But I mean, again, yeah, middle of the field, it was that big play to that speedster that I don't know how you're going to forget about one guy. It's the most athletic dude on the field. But then it's just, it seems like it's been an ongoing issue that I don't really see them fixing anytime soon, is just throwing the ball. If the quarterback is confident enough to trust his arm and let it rip down the middle of the field, there's alleyways there. I mean, Justin Flo looks lost sometimes. And it was why I was texting with you guys before we recorded today, I was wondering if I was missing Justin Flo on the field, but he really wasn't out there that much. And it was the D line was doing such a good job shutting down the run. It seemed like there was no reason to have him on the field, and he just became kind of a liability in the passing game. And I don't know if that was played him off the field. It was nice to see Keith Brown out there. At this point, I'd say he's the better player. I know that you got to keep Justin Flo on the field to keep him happy and out of the transfer portal, but it's interesting to see his weaknesses really, really starting to show more and more.
I do want to mention that speedy wide receiver Jordan Tyson seemed to suffer a fairly serious lower leg injury, and it does look like it's a season-ending injury. So shout out to him. Hopefully he gets healthy quickly, because he was fun to watch. He was definitely one of those Colorado players that really, really jumped off the screen. All right, let's go ahead and jump forward. Let's talk about some of these rumors. And I guess it was an SI.com article came out.
It was an affiliate of Sports Illustrated.
Okay.
And affiliate of Sports Illustrated. If you know anything about what's happened with Sports Illustrated over the past 5 to 10 years, then you understand that that name comes with a massive grain of salt nowadays. Absolutely. In the sports media landscape.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we all knew that one fairly. We remember that.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. We remember that one. Yeah, no doubt. But they did have an article coming out there saying they had sources connecting Dan Lanning to the Auburn coaching vacancy, saying there was mutual interest. Well, that has since been quickly rebuked, and our guy Dan actually went on the record. Zach, do you have a portion of that quote that you want to just read to us here?
Go
ahead and read it to me.
Yeah, we talked to him last night, as he holds a press conference every Monday night. And actually, the first question out of the gate was basically, it was from 247 Sports, Matt Preen.
Yeah, Dan, said, over the weekend, there was a report that you had mutual interest with Auburn. I was curious if you'd like to address that.
Yeah. First off, I'll say, when, you know, things like this are going to come up when you have team success and when you do your job and things go the way, you know, they're supposed to go. That's credit really to our team. That being said, I think there's a little bit of a problem in society today with people looking for what's next and where there's an opportunity. And the reality is, you know, the grass is not always greener. In fact, the grass is damn green in Eugene, right? And I want to be here in Eugene for as long as Eugene will have me. This place has everything that I could possibly ever want, my family could ever want. I've got an 11-year-old that's lived in 8 states. The last thing I ever want to do is leave. right? So I want to enjoy this opportunity here. It's been a phenomenal place for us. And when you talk about things that align, things that, that'll match your vision for what you're looking for as a head coach, you know, Oregon checks every box for me, right? So when other people, I think history maybe shows that it's, this is a great place to be and not a great place to leave. I want to be here. And hopefully that's the last time I have to really address it. But the reality is, this is a destination, not just for me, but for elite players. And why is it a destination? Because great administration, great fans, great support. And it's a good reason to be here and why we're having
You've been connected to this Auburn job, signed this mutual interest. Would you like to address this? And Lanning was kind of like, as the question was being asked, just kind of laughing and shaking his head. And like, as soon as he started doing that, I was like, all right, we're in for a good answer because he's about to get into it. But this part of the quote, I really love. Let me find it. He says, I think there's a little bit of a problem in our society today with people looking for what's next and where there's an opportunity. And the reality is that the grass is not always greener. In fact, the grass is damn green in Eugene, and I want to be here in Eugene for as long as Eugene will have me. That, I mean, that says everything you need to hear right there. Whether you believe him or not, that's up to you. I personally do. I think he's a genuine person who at this stage in his career does not have anywhere that better suits him. He went on, and there's a long quote. I think JD's going to plug the audio in here if possible. It's, you know, Oregon offers everything that he could want right now. He's got every chance he has to succeed. He's got all of the front office and all of the support staff he could ever want, a good recruiting, a good brand. You know, you've got Phil Knight in your pocket. So I don't know. I love the full quote. And I'm impressed by the way he handled it.
He's really good on the mic. He's definitely very good. And that's kind of like it's a nice, you know, Oregon and this whole area being like the grass seed capital of the world, you know, grass is always greener here. There might be another reference there certain people may take. So take that if you will. But yeah, just that's real. It's good to hear, you know, and I like it when a coach doesn't shy away from those kinds of things and just wants to shut those types of rumors down immediately. I mean, we've had that happen in the past and things come out later on. But again, everything we know about Dan Lanning is he's a guy that's going to stick by his word.
Remember how last week I mentioned like Duck fans are like the significant other that's been cheated on? It's like that. It's like that still applies. And this new significant other knows about this person's trauma and just sits down and like really tries to make him feel good. Like, I'm not going anywhere. Don't go through my phone.
But that was the thing too. I mean, we had the same conversation last year with Mario, and these rumors about Miami kept coming up, and Mario didn't do a good job of nipping that in the bud. And obviously it's because the rumors were very true, but Mario came out and said, you know what? We're not focused on that. We're focused on this game. You know what? I'm not going to talk about rumors. All I'm thinking about is our team. Lanning came out, talked about the rumors and said, hey, these rumors are not true. I'm not going anywhere. Like Shane said, and so that, I don't know, it's just really refreshing from a fan's perspective to be like, oh, okay, this guy, he hears it and he's on our side and willing to really reconfirm his stance and kind of just tell us straight up to like, yeah, don't listen to that. That's not true. Instead of just dancing around the point and making us all sound stupid for even wondering.
Yeah, he did a great job of only setting Duck Twitter on fire for like 2 hours, which is like really nothing. I mean, like Cristobal, like as soon as Miami got brought up, it was like, bah! Like people were like blocking each other because like, you know, it was just like it turned into this like hellfire of like who was like a true Duck fan and like who wasn't and like that being debated back and forth. So it was really nice, especially with a big opponent coming up and like, you know, the big rivalry week to just get that out of the way. And just like, let's focus on this game. I don't want to like talk about, I'd rather be asked about Washington a million times than Auburn at this point.
I've got an interesting question for you guys. Go ahead, Zach. And then I've got a thought experience.
I just want to throw this. There's one more tiny quote in that, in the whole answer that I loved. He said, I think history shows that this is a great place to be and not necessarily a great place to leave. Chef's kiss. Perfect. If you look at Oregon coaches that have left and gone on to their dream jobs or alma maters, hasn't always worked out for them. So I just think that was kind of a perfect little, you know, little cookie for the fans that were tuning into this one to really hear what he had to say.
So just to jump on that question real quick, take this podcast possibly on a little segue here. Miami Hurricanes lose 45-3 to Florida State last week. 45-3. If Cristobal gets visited by like one of those ghosts, you know, that can like show him his future, you know, last year, you know, show him basically how this whole Miami thing is going to play out, and he's in his position now, does he stay here at Oregon?
I don't think he does.
No, you still think he leaves?
Because to be completely honest, I think we all knew that this train wreck possibility in Miami was possible this year. I didn't know it was going to be possible to this magnitude, but we knew, and he knew, he was very upfront about it needing to be a rebuilding process. And it's not a shock that they're not, you know, in contention this year, but that's not to say that they won't be next year or the year after. I think he always knew that it was going to take some time. I think even if you offered him right now, like you were saying, the chance to go back or stay where he is, I think he's strong-headed enough to believe in what he's doing. And I think he will be good eventually. It's just been a very fun few months for Oregon fans to look and be like, yeah, you made the wrong decision.
I agree with Zach, but this is going to sound a little more detrimental to Cristobal. I think that he was starting to realize that him being in a position to be kind of like on the door to the college football playoff was bad for him as a coach, because there was some major flaws in his coaching game. And it wasn't like he had a ton of experience. I mean, we're looking at Lanning and this coaching staff being young, but he also wasn't like an old head coach getting a first job. And so, I mean, he was an offensive line coach, and he was such a good recruiter, and he was doing, I mean, we're seeing the evidence of that with this Oregon team, with how good of a recruiter he was. But some of the things he would do, like we were mentioning before, with like the timeouts and the end of halves and just like mismanaging time and not being able to throw the ball down the field with Justin Herbert, will forever be kind of this stink on him that I'm sure just he wants to get as far away from as possible. So I think him going into kind of a rebuild, he's like, all right, let me learn how to be a better head coach while this team struggles, and I won't take all the shit for it that I would have taken. Like, if he would have gotten put in more of these big primetime games and had some of these coaching flaws against SEC teams and like these guys that he considered his peers at one point, they could have exposed him, and that could have hurt his career trajectory. I mean, basically for forever.
No, well, really good points. Really good points.
It's kind of like the guy that was, you know, given his dream job before he's ready, and at the point where almost everyone almost figured out that he's not qualified, he went to another place where he could buy some time and, you know, maybe get qualified or just extend his career. It's like a GM trading away for picks, because you're not going to get fired if you have all of the draft picks in the NBA, because you've always got the future to sell. So that's kind of what the Cristobal situation reminds me of.
Chris Ballard sitting there like, whoa, what's the shots at me for over here? I'm doing anything in Indianapolis. Like, geez, man.
Did you hear his kind of like semi-bizarre quote about, was it
Byron? Trey Benson.
Or Trey Benson, yeah. Yeah,
yes, yeah. Oh, I love it. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Dude was so strange. He's like, well, yeah, it's just proof of like what we, you know, what we were doing over at Oregon, what we were like able to. And it's like, you've kind of fucked all up anyways. Like,
so for the context, people don't know, Miami lost to Florida State, which is where Trey Benson, who was a former Oregon running back, transferred to and is, you know, running wild out there, having a great season. Good for him. He destroyed Miami this last week. I don't have his stats in front of me, but had a great game. And Cristobal was kind of talking about the game afterwards and said, yeah, Trey Benson, he's a guy we had at Oregon. He's really good. Like, that's proof that this program here in Miami is going somewhere. It's like, is it? Are you just kind of trying to take credit where you can get it and just trying to deflect a little bit? I just thought, like, that was hilarious.
Failing to mention that he didn't stay at Oregon. And like, it was like,
no, the picture of those two, that was fantastic. I put that up on our Instagram. Yeah. Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. And just to give it justice, 15 carries, 128 yards and 2 touchdowns. Kid went off for sure. All right, let's go ahead and jump into some CFP talk now. We are recording, just for everybody, we're about 2:30 here in the afternoon, so we are before the new rankings come out. But the Ducks have moved up to 6th in the AP poll, right behind one loss Tennessee and undefeated TCU. Michigan jumps up to 3, Ohio State at 2, and Georgia now at 1 in the AP poll. So again, we can kind of, I think it gets a little more interesting this week to talk about like what our rankings would be, but I don't want to step on your experiment here, Zach. So I'm going to throw it to you. You throw your thought experiment at us and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Yeah, this is a good time to do this. So I was curious, if you look at the ranking, what JD just laid out, how many teams, I can either say ahead of us, or let's just say how many teams in the top 10 do you feel confident Oregon can beat?
Ooh, good question.
Wow. Yeah, that is a good question.
So just again, for reference,
and maybe Shane, not beat, but up. Just be in a good competitive
who can they battle with?
Game. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
So we've got Georgia number one, Ohio State two, Michigan three, TCU four, the Tennessee Volunteers five, Duck six, LSU at seven, USC at eight, UCLA at nine, and Alabama at 10. So Zach's asking, how many of those teams can the Ducks hang with, legitimately hang with? What do you got, Shane?
Man, that is a – I'm going to say Michigan, yes. TCU, yes. Obviously, UCLA. I think it's pretty – we feel pretty confident about USC. So that's four. I want to say Tennessee. I mean, Ohio State, Oregon did beat last year, right? But I mean,
different teams.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very different teams. And I
say the Ducks hang with six of them. I think it's a competitive game against six of those teams. I think
that's
teams,
the number I had as well.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen what it is against Georgia. I think that game is much different if it's replayed, but I think, again, we've talked about it, just the depth. I think Oregon, Ohio State would be fascinating on numerous levels, and I would love to see that rematch. But speaking not from my heart, I think Ohio State is the better team, even though they did struggle this last week to beat a really terrible Northwestern team. Yeah, where it starts to get interesting is like Tennessee, Alabama, LSU. I mean, those SEC schools, it's hard to judge. It really is hard to judge.
Yeah, Alabama would be a tough one. I think LSU, just the way that they play, and it's a quarter, like a former Pac-12 quarterback.
Man, Jaden Daniels cooked us, though.
Yeah.
The three teams that I have Oregon losing to in that hypothetical scenario would be Georgia, Ohio State, and Tennessee. I think Georgia, we've already seen. I mean, they're so good at every facet of the game. And then Ohio State and Tennessee, I think they'd be maybe semi-competitive games, but I don't trust Oregon's defense to stop those offensive attacks. I think that Oregon would score on them. I think it'd be a shootout and a good game, but I just can't really say in my heart of hearts that the Ducks would win that game. But you look at Alabama, you look at other teams, I think the Ducks, you know, face a really good chance against a Michigan or something like that, because, you know, Alabama in particular does not have a normal Alabama defense this year. I mean, I think the Ducks could put up some points on them. And, you know, again, it would, all of these games would be a high scoring affair, but I thought that was just interesting to talk about.
Well, and Bama is an interesting matchup too, because they don't have those studs at the wide receiver position this year necessarily either. So yeah, that's an interesting thought experiment. I like that, the way to look at that, as opposed to just, oh, who the best four teams. That's interesting. Good call, Zach.
Yeah, I think Michigan's the most beatable out of those top teams for this Oregon team. Michigan, really? And TCU. Yeah. I haven't been super impressed by Michigan.
It's also interesting to think that what Michigan excels at, what they're really good at, is the running game, and what Oregon is really good at on defense is run defense. So I think that matchup may be good for Oregon. I don't know that they'd beat them. I think it'd be a close game. That's one that I'm kind of on the fence on. I'm either picking five teams or six teams that Oregon could beat. Michigan's on that line for me.
I see Noah and Blake Corum becoming intimately acquainted in that game right there. Wow, that would be really fun to watch. I think that's an intriguing matchup, because I think Michigan's going to lose. I don't know if Oregon's going to get into the CFP, so I think a Ducks-Michigan Rose Bowl is definitely on the table, and yeah. Boy, that's a fascinating, fascinating matchup right there. All right, anything else you guys want to talk about here about the CFP? You guys want to predict your top four here before the rankings come out?
No, I think we should predict our top five or six. So, okay. I mean, there's four undefeated teams. I think Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan are top three. Michigan, Ohio State, probably interchangeable, one or two. probably put TCU at 4, and then it's either Oregon at 5, Tennessee at 6, Tennessee at 5, Oregon at 6. It kind of depends on what the committee, you know, if that loss last week makes them put Tennessee down a peg. I mean, they both lost to the same team. I think Tennessee played them a little bit better than Oregon did, obviously, but that's one thing that I'm looking, that's what interests me this week. Cause other than that, you know, the top four are pretty chalk in my mind.
Yep.
I don't know what Tennessee's upcoming schedule looks like, but the committee does do a thing where they put a team in the prove it situation, sometimes in the, a little bit of the higher seed. I mean, it's what they did with Tennessee, kind of putting them number one earlier, or in the initial rankings. So it would, like, that's the only way I could kind of see the committee going with Oregon over Tennessee, just because of the quality of the loss. But I mean, that's just be because they would think that Oregon might be losing to Washington, Utah, or Oregon State. So
yeah, Tennessee is going into a little bit of a cakewalk of their schedule. They've got Missouri, who's been actually tough. It's been a feisty Missouri team. Good old Spencer Rattler there at South Carolina, and then Vanderbilt. And South Carolina and Vanderbilt are on the road. So kind of a cake there for Tennessee the rest of the season. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I'm with you guys. Not much more to add there. Let's get into it. Let's get into Husky Hate Week, what the people are really here for. The reason why to this day I have a hard time wearing purple is my absolute disdain for that program that takes their football up there in Seattle. Coming in, both teams ranked, you know, it's a fun thing, you know, when these teams are both good, you know, that is good for the Pac-12. I think overall, Huskies coming off a win against Cal, but definitely, Oregon State. Yeah. I don't know why I have Cal game pulled up. There it is. A tough battle against the Beavers for sure. But as you guys look forward to this game, Zach, in particular, what's the matchup that you're kind of focused on here, or what's the thing you're most excited about as a fan?
Well, so I'll start off by saying that this one kind of scares me a little bit, because I am fairly confident about Oregon's ability in this. And I was talking with other beat reporters today at interviews. There's an air of confidence around everybody that, you know, Oregon's going to handle business here. And that's what scares me. Like we've talked before that, you know, when everyone's so confident something's going to happen, you might want to take the other side. But I mean, a lot of people are talking about Washington's passing offense against Oregon's defense. And yeah, Washington's offense is good. They got the number one passing offense, number 10 total offense in the nation, number 13 scoring offense in the nation, averaging 38 points per game. I think that Oregon's defense is decent enough to hold them down. Where I think this game is going to be decided is Oregon's offense against Washington's defense. Oregon, number 3 scoring offense in the nation, number 11 rushing offense, number 2 total offense. And Washington's defense is, you know, number 39 total defense, number 81 scoring defense, allowing 28 points per game, number 79 passing defense. I mean, I think that Washington's going to put up some points, but I don't think they have any way to slow down Oregon. So we'll get into a duck dinner corner. I think a ton of points are going to be scored in this game. I'm leaning to the over early on because I don't think either team's going to stop the other one very much. But if I'm picking offenses and picking quarterbacks, I'm going with the Ducks and Bo Nix and Kenny Dillingham. I feel confident that, you know, they're going to get this one, and the win is going to be on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I'm glad that this game is being played at Autzen Stadium. I'll say that just because it's such an intense matchup that I do think that there's where Oregon could get in trouble would be like penalties and stuff like that, and just maybe some stupid chippiness happening. But with the game being at home, hopefully it at least limits some like false starts and stuff like that, and Oregon's maybe at least able to carry some momentum in this one. But yeah, there's a lot of new faces in this big matchup too. I mean, this is Justin Flo's first matchup against Washington, Bo Nix, the running backs. I mean, the offensive line and some of these other guys have been around the block. I mean, even it's kind of like a newer receiving core as well. So I do agree with Zach. There's going to be a lot of points scored. And I think that favors Oregon, even though Washington has this amazing passing attack, because I feel like this game is going to be played a little bit faster and looser than some of the games that they've played earlier in the year, and some of the especially earlier matchups with Washington, where we've seen them kind of get in gridlock in certain years prior. So I like the fact that even if Washington goes up 7-10 points early in this game, I'm fairly confident that Oregon's going to be able to make that up with how touch and go Washington's defense has kind of looked at times. Because early in the year, we're like, man, this defense is good. They're scoring a lot of points. They're holding teams down. And then we learned that they can't put that together for four quarters or let alone two games or anything like that. So even some of the better games that they've had, and even last week they played okay against Oregon State. They picked up that win. I don't think that that was exactly how Washington fans would have liked to have that go. But I mean, they when it came down to it, they were able to come away with the W. So they were able to carry the least amount of momentum possible after a win, I would say, into this matchup. They did get a little bit of a longer week with the game being played last Friday. But yeah, I'm pretty confident with Oregon's, what Oregon does well being better than what Washington does well in this game, just because purely based on the matchups. And like I mentioned earlier, Justin Flo's first matchup with Washington, I was very critical of him just moments ago. I'd be looking for him early to just, this is where I want to see him almost just like fully just let it loose. Like all of it, all of the screaming, the getting the team psyched up. I want to see him carry the torch as being the emotional leader for this team early. Keep it in check. Don't get a penalty. Don't get kicked out. But I want to see his post-play fucking screaming future WWE AEW star once he's done with his professional football career, Bill Goldberg style. I want to see all of that stuff on full display.
So you want to see 50 milligrams instead of 30 milligrams. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Exactly. I want to see, you know, when he does the thing where he doesn't even make the play and then he celebrates like you do. I'm always like going back and I'm like, what did he do? Oh, he didn't do anything. He's just celebrating on behalf of another player. I want to see all of that.
I want to see Justin Flo in the locker room, just what he's like pregame. Like if he's, I could almost see him being like a silent assassin in the locker room, just like with the headphones on and just like quiet, like that guy that's kind of got the crazy eyes kind of going. But Shane, I'm really glad that you referenced, I mean, that Beaver Husky game was prime viewing in my household on Friday night. I don't know what you guys were up to, but I was really watching that with a close eye. And I loved what the Beavers were doing on defense. They said, okay, we know that we really can't match up with you in the passing game, but we're going to completely take away the run. We're going to make you 100% one dimensional. And I think the Ducks, if they're smart, watched that game and can just, oh, we can just copy paste because our guys are better than what the Beavers are able to put out there. At least, you know, our secondary might give up, you know, 21 or 22 points. But again, our offense is going to score so much more than that because, oh, we have Bo Nix and not, what's this, Ben Gilbranson, who went 12 of 19 for 87 yards. I feel pretty confident. I will eat a $5 bill if Bo Nix doesn't throw for Michael Branson did. So I think that that's going to be like Zach was kind of mentioning there earlier on, that's the key matchup. Yeah, we want to focus in on, you know, what the Ducks can do on the defensive side of the ball, but it's really going to be our offense that's going to go out there and win this game against the Huskies. Getting a little bit of national attention, you know, just being a ranked matchup here. Obviously, this is hotly contested here in the Pacific Northwest. Still tickets available. I was kind of perusing today just in the idea of maybe going to this one and just getting in the stadium. Not too bad, like $60 tickets available out there for anybody that's still looking. So jump out there, Duck fans, and make sure we swoop all of those tickets up so no extra Huskies are in the stadium. Shout out my niece, who was unfortunately a Husky fan, who will be there in Autzen with all of her Husky garb and as a pod listener. So shout out Chelsea. Unfortunately, it's going to be a sad week for you. It's going to be a bad day for you on Saturday. But
that's a rough, like, enemy territory game too.
It is. It splits families apart, just like the Platypus Cup does. It's just one of those things.
And Duck that we fans live with. Are not nice. So
that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if I do it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, as much as, like, you know, you love going out and supporting your team, like, you got to have a lot of, like, got a lot of lettuce shit to, like, slide off your back, like, mm-hmm. wearing purple on Saturday. Tough skin.
She'll handle. I mean, she was one of the first girls to ever play football there where she's from. So I think she'll handle herself out there, I think, and take care of any naysayers. So, hey, Duck fans, be nice. Just be nice. Hydrate and be nice while you guys are out there. All right. So as we, again, look to break this down a little bit more, we've both kind of, or all of us kind of talked a little bit about what we're looking forward to. Is there a particular thing that's really scares you? I mean, we've talked a little bit about this Oregon secondary being kind of one of the biggest things, but as you go into this game, Shane, what's your fright factor here on this game here happening on Saturday?
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. It'd be the secondary. And if I'm like putting a scale on it, I'm saying I'm like 8 out of 10 concerned about the secondary, I'd say. But like I just said, I do think that Oregon is going to be scoring points on the other side. And the one thing I do like about the evolution of the secondary is a lot of people aren't happy with what they're seeing from them at this point in the season, but there has been progression. They are playing better. Tryquez Bridges has been better in coverage and better tackling on the edges. Christian Gonzalez is looked at as almost some sort of like a lockdown corner at this point. Like the commentators in the last game, every time they threw at him, were kind of like, I don't know if I'd go there. You know what I mean? And just feeling like this guy's like a first round draft. There's other places to throw the ball. But yeah, it's going to be big for guys like Steve Stevens and some of these other guys, Addison, these players that we've looked at, especially with no Jamal Hill out there, who's going to kind of take over that role in that kind of like, he's like a nickel corner basically at this point, isn't he, Zach? Jamal Hill?
Yeah, he's around that role. He moves around a little bit, but yeah.
But yeah, who's going to be over there? And especially that role kind of helping out in the middle of the field. And sometimes, you know, being able to get past a good amount of blockers in the screen game and things like that. And it, you do kind of have to look at Bennett Williams and some of these other players to cover some of the slack in the middle, because the linebackers are asked to do so much near the line of scrimmage that it's hard for them to get in that, like that little just 8 to 12 yard pocket past the line of scrimmage is where teams have really been able to take advantage. And I don't see Penix not being able to take advantage of that as well.
Why do you always put such a hard E on that? It's Penix.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure. Yes, I'm sure.
All right, Zach, what's your fright factor? What's something that scares you about this matchup?
Yeah, going along with what Shane was saying, I mean, if the Ducks were to lose this game or really be pushed late in the end, it's because the secondary is unable to hold up against what is a really good passing attack. I mean, we don't need to say it anymore. Washington can throw the ball, and they're really good in that facet of the game. But kind of branching off of that, one thing that worries me a bit is just whether or not Oregon's defensive line can really get pressure on Penix. I mean, we talked about it a little bit before. They didn't have a sack against Colorado, which was kind of a glaring mistake, I guess you would say, but Washington's offensive line is good. They're solid. They've got some NFL prospects on that offensive line, and they throw the ball more than 40 times a game, and they don't, I think, I forget exactly what the stat was, but they allow one sack every 65 pass attempts, I believe, which is, you know, that's impressive. And of course, Oregon's offensive line is impressive too, so it's not like they're, you know, far and away the best in this game or anything, but if the Ducks are allowed or able to get some pressure, I'm going to feel a lot more confident early in this game that, you know, they can handle business. But, you know, it's going to be touch and go for a bit, because I'm sure that the Ducks are going to give up big plays in the secondary. It's something that we're going to see throughout the game, and fans are just going to have to, you know, kind of take some punches and roll for a little bit and just hope that in the end, Oregon's offense is that much better and could put more points on the board.
I'm gonna zag a little bit while you guys are zigging here. I think that's definitely the thing that's been, you know, on our podcast here, the thing that we've talked about the most too, is that secondary and just the defense. Oregon, again, I don't have the stats in front of me here, but I feel like Oregon's turnover luck has been exceptional this year. And I'm going to knock on wood before I even say anything, but I have this fear that there's a turnover bug game coming. You know, where there's just going to be a funky interception, a funky fumble, you know, just some weird luck happening just because Oregon's been running so hot, you know, just, you know, you're going to get the scales are going to balance, you know, eventually. So I guess because I don't see an obvious matchup that I'm afraid of. So I guess maybe my brain is just looking for things to be scared of because, you know, that's what we're prone to do here as humans. But I think that turnover bug is something that I'm fearful of.
But with that, I understand that fear. I kind of share it too. But I also don't think that fear should be as bad as it was at the start of the season, because we've seen Knicks have some turnovers and bounce back really quickly. Yep. I mean, I know two picks against Cal, one of them was a real pick. The other was obviously a Hail Mary. But one of them was a real pick that wasn't his fault. It was one of those kind of unlucky situations where, you know, it hit Franklin in the hands and the chest and went to the other team. But he bounced back right away and still had a great game. So, yes, I think that turnovers can happen, but I'm also confident enough in his ability and his confidence to get back on the bike and, you know, see things through and make sure that it doesn't tank the game.
He also made like a couple small errors in this last week's game against Colorado. Like he was the reason why they got a couple stupid penalties, and you saw him like acknowledge it. There was one play when he kind of caused a false start and he like hit himself in the helmet a couple times, walked back to where like basically they were going to line up the next play and just got right back to it. And then they scored like, I don't know, three plays later or something like that. So it's cool to see even like just the way he's handling mistakes is so much different than when he was at Auburn. And I know we've gone through like all the differences that we've seen from him, but it makes me less worried about like a dumb, like, cause if they like fumble like a snap or something, Washington gets it back and scores and it puts Oregon in a hole. I don't see him doing the mental spiral that I was worried he was going to do 6 weeks ago.
No, that's a good way to put it for sure. That just, there's more just pure confidence, you know, in his ability to bounce back from those mistakes. All right. Anything else that you guys are looking forward to, or just anything else you guys want to get to in regards to this good old rivalry game on Saturday?
I've got one kind of overarching thing just on the rivalry in general. I wrote a column yesterday about this, that this, I mean, all rivalry games are important every year. It's always, you know, one of the most important games on the schedule to win. This year in particular feels a little bit more important than years past because of the new coaches on both sides of the ball, because it's Dan Lanning's first rivalry game against Washington, Florida, because it's Kalen DeBoer's first game against Oregon. This feels like a new chapter is being written in this rivalry. And I think that winning the first game is going to say a lot. It kind of establishes, you know, a precedent going forward. I know that I don't want to say that winning the first game is more important than winning the second and third games or whatever, because it's going to balance out eventually. But I think this is a big feather in the cap win for Dan Lanning in his first year, because I know that coming into Oregon with this job, he probably got told a lot that, you know, if you're going to win any two games this year, it needs to be Washington and Oregon. You can, or, and Oregon State. You can lose the other 10. If you win those two, there's a victory in that, just because you're keeping those rivalry, you know, that dominance alive in those games. So I just think that, you know, this game's obviously important. There's a ton of ramifications on it, but that's just really something that I'm paying attention to this year.
So is that article on this great website, duckswire.usatoday.com?
It absolutely is. Thank you for asking.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. What a great website. I actually have that pulled up right now. What a fantastic website. So yeah, I think, I mean, like I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, I mean, this rivalry was, you know, ingrained into me as a child. You know, you learn growing up, you know, we hate the Huskies and we hate the Beavers. That's how it is as a Duck fan. And those rivalries have now evolved to also include Stanford, also include USC for the players, I think, in particular. But I think for fans, you know, it doesn't get much better than Husky Hate Week or the Platypus Cup.
So that's kind of where, go ahead, Shane.
I was just going to say, I think Husky Hate Week takes the cake too, especially just as far as like national significance.
This segues perfectly into the other little question I had for you guys going into this little exercise. Rank the Oregon rivalries. You know, we've got Washington, Oregon State. Do you consider Utah a rivalry? USC? JD said Stanford. I'm curious what you guys thought. We had this conversation earlier at the media availability. I'm just curious what you guys think.
So I'd go, if I was going to rank them, I'd go Washington, Oregon State. Then I'd say USC because of the players and how it's been, with how Los Angeles players are recruited. I would say as far as a fan, I would almost go four or five are interchangeable, Stanford, Washington State. Just as far really? As like the teams.
You have Stanford and Washington State ahead of Utah.
Yeah. It's beginning because they weren't part of the Pac-12 for the whole, or they weren't in the Pac-10. Yeah. That might have something to do with it. But like just me personally as like a fan, like there's like, you know, Washington State gets their first game day against Oregon. Like how many times did Oregon, you know, just fumble the bag on a season in Pullman? And then Stanford, it was that whole like Stanford. David Shaw like era of just like playing anti Pac-12 football or Pac-10 football, whatever you want to call it at the time. Like everybody's spread it out. Chip Kelly, everything's fun. Everybody's scoring a billion points. And then here's Stanford just like running I form and just beating everybody. And just Gerhardt. Exactly.
Toby Gerhardt.
So, I mean, like that, just like for me as a fan, those are the ones that always like kind of perk my ears more than the other schools, just because of like, I guess how much more disappointment I felt in matchups with those two schools.
So I want to preface my rankings by saying that my girlfriend, my partner, she was a Beaver fan when we first met, and I've since converted her. She's definitely a Duck fan now with some platypus leanings. So I feel like my hatred for the Beavers has lessened just a little bit. It softened just a little bit. I'm going to go Huskies one. I hate Stanford. What's a Cardinal? I hate Stanford. So I'm going to put Stanford two just for me personally. Then I'll go Beavers. And then that four spot is tough. Like Utah, definitely just the recency. But I'm going back to that Fright Night game against USC we had here on Halloween. I just think that was such an incredible environment. The players, you see how fired they get up for that rivalry. So I'm going to go USC, and then I'm going to go Utah, because there is that, especially if we match up against Utah like this year in the Pac-12 championship game, I think then you've got something really brewing there, because they are kind of the new Stanford in the way that they play football. So no, great question. But I think, yeah, just I hate Stanford, man.
But there's all right. Here's like my weird wrinkle about this is that Utah has kind of almost been a torch carrier for the Pac-12, where I found myself rooting for them more often than I'm rooting against them. Because I always want them to be highly ranked, and they're one of the only teams that has kind of like somehow escaped the West Coast bias, where they're like, I feel like they've gotten more of a push from the voters than like your UCLA's had in like prior years. And because I've always wanted, like, I'm a big back the pack guy, I've always wanted to get them as far out in front. So it's like, maybe that's why I don't feel as much animosity towards them, because I've always kind of wanted them to be the kind of the team that might be able to hang with some of these Southern schools.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's a good point. I mean, that loss to Florida, that was really surprising to me earlier on in the season. So, all right, let's go ahead and jump on forward then. Talk about a little round ball. We had some basketball played at Matthew Knight Arena yesterday. The women played first, rolling out to a 100-57 victory over the Northwestern Wildcats. A pretty dominant performance overall. Shane, I want to go to you first. What was your first row viewing like there, being in Matthew Knight?
It was nice. It was good being back in the arena. It was cool because we got to see some new faces. Nice freshman class in this year's team. Highlighted by Van Sluten.
Bryce Van Sluten, yeah.
Yeah,
what a
who
player.
Is a absolute freight train. Didn't take long for her to get started scoring. And from there, she's kind of kept it rolling. She was excellent in transition. She reminded me a lot of Niara Sabali, just the way she played. She's a little bit taller than Niara, but has that same ability to get out in the open floor, handle the ball, plays good defense, was switching onto everybody. That was probably the biggest takeaway I thought as a team, was the defense was suffocating. This was a Northwestern team that they made. I mean, they're a Big Ten team. They're, you know, a Power Five conference team, and they made them look like they were Division III. They didn't even get a really good look until probably about the end of the first quarter. There was a little period where they started to hit some threes, and I think it was right after halftime, and it was kind of, they were kind of trading baskets, but within that they were never really able to come back from, I think they were down like 19 at half or something like that. And so, I mean, yeah, they ended up winning by whatever you said, 43 points. It honestly could have been worse had they not kind of hit a little bit of a hot streak. Northwestern wasn't really able to do anything at all. The only thing that I was a little bit disappointed by, and it was a little bit of a red flag, was rebounding. Early in the game, Filipina Shea did a good job. She looked like she'd done a good job improving her physicality. She wasn't avoiding contact as much, but played kind of limited minutes. Wasn't really sure if that was because of the score or they were just trying to get the rotations going. But some of the players just struggled to get their, I mean, like I said, they could have won by 60 had they not gave them some extra possessions. And who's the other Asai, is that how you say her name? She's just Asai. Living it at the free throw line and just had, you can tell, like, she didn't do a great job scoring the ball as far as like hitting field goals, but just high basketball IQ, just having her out there. You could tell she was just going around and she was just always in the right place and just making the right reads, knowing that if she pump faked, his defense was over aggressive and they were going to run into her. Some other players kind of struggled. I wouldn't say it was Tina Pau Pau's greatest performance, but it seemed like she was kind of taking a backseat almost like intentionally. And Chance Gray moment could have been a little bit too big, kind of made some mistakes, snowballed, but I didn't see any like major red flags in her either.
Yeah, she's solid though.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right, Zach, what do you got to add to that?
Yeah, I don't have much to add. That was a good breakdown. I was very impressed by this freshman class. I mean, Kelly did it again. He can recruit if nothing mm-hmm. else. And Van Sluten looks like the absolute real deal. And there was some buzz coming into this season that, you know, she wasn't even the highest recruit in this class. Chance Gray was, I think Gray was the number 7 player in the class. Van Sluten was, off the top of my head, I want to say like 13 in the class, but Van Sluten looks really good. She's got that Savali energy, whether it's Naira or Satu. She looks kind of like a unicorn out there. So I'm incredibly excited to see what she can do, not only this season, but in her Oregon career.
Yeah, she has that little scoop layup in transition. Oh, it's filthy. And then she hit like kind of a little Euro step at one point. I was like, what is happening right now? I think most people were kind of excited to watch Chance Gray, but she had a couple turnovers and Kelly kind of had her on a little bit of a tighter leash, kind of took her out every time something happened, but they were really, there was a lot of substitutions going on. It was almost every dead ball. They were changing like at least one player out. So we got to see a lot from each player. And so some players were a little bit highlighted more than others, but it was still a good showing overall.
Yeah, we have our In Dana We Trust, you know, kind of segment. We need to think of something for Kelly. You know, there's got to be a Kelly Graves little motto there. So if anybody thinks of anything, tweet us, shoot us out on Twitter, and think of some kind of slogan for Kelly Graves. Because, yeah, he's got something special really brewing here in Eugene with his ability to bring in class after class. All right. As good as the women looked, the men also played at 7 o'clock there at Matthew Knight Arena, playing Florida A&M. Final score looks convincing, 80-45, but there may be some things kind of hidden away in there. So, Zach, I want to go to you here first. What was your main takeaways from this game against Florida A&M? Are they the Dragons? Is that right?
I don't even know what their mascot is.
All right, I'm gonna look that up real quick.
I'm not sure.
You go ahead and wax poetic. I'll look that up. I'll do my
producer duties. I avoided writing their mascot in any of my stories because I was like, I don't know what that is, and I'm not gonna look it up right now. So. I think my biggest takeaway from this game is that it's simply too early to take away anything from this team, because Dana has been very vocal this, you know, I guess you want to call it preseason / off season, that they have been severely injured the past, you know, couple of months. They've been struggling to field full teams for practices. They've had a lot of people miss, you know, 2-3 weeks, and they're just, they are not where they need to be, where they hope they are, they would be right now. That being said, Infali Dante looked great. Khalil Ware looked decent. He looked pretty good. He's definitely a great shot blocker. He altered a ton of shots. But, you know, there's a lot of room to grow. The shooting really struggled. I think at one point the Ducks were 1-for-18 from 3. They kept shooting it, which I'm sure Dana loved. But, yeah, like JD said, The final score was more convincing than the actual game was. This was actually like an 11-12 point game for much of the contest. And then Oregon went on a run with about, you know, 10 minutes left to push it up to 30 points. So there's a lot of room to grow, but I'm not hitting the panic button or anything. It's a early season November Dana Altman team. We all know the deal here. He's going to figure it out. They should be fine.
His name is Dana Altman. He aligns Rubik's Cubes, as our friend John Rothstein tweets out on a regular basis. I want to give you a chance here, Shannon. I just want to step back. I'm going to clear out. We're going to pass you the ball. I'm going to clear out a little bit here. And don't have to get too deep on this, but just the Will Richardson of it all.
It's interesting. I was very vocal that I thought that he was going to not be a part of this year's team, just based on how I felt like his body language was and how he seemed detached from the team, a little bit dejected. It looked like and this is just me speculating, but it looked like he wasn't having fun playing the game. So I thought with his stock still being pretty high, he would take, you know, his talents elsewhere and hit the transfer portal and maybe try and kind of resurrect his career a little bit, a la Remy Martin. But it's interesting that he came back. You know, I ate that one. I was wrong on that one. But then for the first game of the season to be very much an extension of what I was worried about from last year makes me curious as to why he's back here, or if this is just kind of a flash in the pan. I mean, we've speculated that there's these Oregon teams that didn't even like each other, and then they made tournament runs. So it's not to say that it can't be a success. And I don't want to sound like I'm just kind of dogging on Will here, but to look at his numbers, look at his box score, and then to kind of see some just in some short clips from the game, just him being a little bit like a, just not involved in the play and kind of just away from things. Did you guys see a couple days ago when Anthony Edwards for the Timberwolves was just standing with his hands on his hips and he just watched that whole possession happen when he just stood at the 3-point line? So for people out there who did see it, it reminds me of that, where he's just kind of like, what are we doing here? And I kind of have that same question. And I really hope, when he was paired with Peyton, it was so fun to watch. And Justin and I were so excited about him getting handed the keys and him going to be this, we were calling it, he was going to be a Pac-12 player of the year.
Dude, I and said it's some just, crazy stuff.
But that's not, I don't think that was a crazy thing to say at the time, to going into like, from what we saw from that sample size and on that team where he wasn't really asked to do the heavy lifting offensively and what he was able to do offensively. So then we thought, okay, when he is like this high usage player, he's going to kill. And he was this big recruit from Oak Hill. It was all the stars aligning. So I don't know, you know, it's going to be something that I keep a really, really close eye on. I want to go to a couple games just to even see some like during commercial stuff, like what he is like and what his passion for the game looks like. And if that translates to his success or not, because we do know that he's a very mild demeanor person. You see him in interviews and he's very low tone, monotone talker. He doesn't seem like he's the big, you know, Justin Flo type player, but I do want to see some of that swag come back and approach the game with more confidence and fun.
Well, and last night, I mean, Will was, he was really passive, especially early on. He wasn't really looking for his own shot. And I even asked Dana after the game, I said, you know, was that kind of by design? Were you really trying to have him get other people involved? You know, knowing that this is a game that you guys should win by a lot. I mean, the point spread was 30 points. So, and Dana actually surprised me. He said, you know what? No, I actually wanted him to be more aggressive. I was kind of frustrated that he didn't take these line drives to the hoops and get his own shot at some point. So that's something that, you know, we'll work on going forward and he'll learn and we'll fix. But that shocked me because I thought I was kind of lobbing him an answer to say that, oh yeah, Will was playing the point guard out there and getting everyone involved. And he's like, no, I wanted more from him. So yeah, like Shane said, it's something to keep an eye on. But as I was saying earlier, I think it's too early in the season the team is too raw and you know, they're not at their final product yet. So I still think he can be the guy that we want him to be. But you know, we'll see. It's still a work in progress.
Well, we see with like men's college basketball, like right now we're in the preseason that counts portion of the season, where like every team is still kind of putting pieces together, and the way dudes like reclassify and transfer and everything, it's like, it's a whirlwind of players being added at certain points in the season. So these first couple of weeks don't matter quite as much, although they go on your, you know, your quote unquote permanent record. We've seen teams struggle and, you know, go 0-for-5 and then go and make deep runs in March. So it really, the sport's kind of in a weird place, and it's in that weird portion of the weird place.
Rattlesnake.
Oh, rattlesnake.
Yep, rattlesnake.
Oh, I was like, what are you talking about? I just
Tallahassee, Florida.
I was like, that was a metaphor that, yeah, I didn't pick up on. Rattlesnake.
It's a code word or something.
Rattlesnake.
We're going too long. Rattlesnake.
The Ducks will host UC Irvine on Friday. The Men Ducks will host UC Irvine on Friday, November 11th. And then the women actually will host Seattle on Saturday at 11 a.m. So if you want to get in the game before...
Odie Gilden's on the coaching staff there.
Isn't the Houston game on Sunday? Do I have that right?
Maybe. I haven't looked that far. I was just reading this cool article right now on Ducks Wire, because they tell you what the next game is. So it's real handy.
We should tell you what the next two games are, because then I would have the answer to my question. Let me talk to the writers over there.
Seriously. If you know a guy,
put it. November. So November 20th, Houston, number 3 in the nation, Houston big comes test. To Eugene.
Yep.
Let's hope the Ducks figure some things out before that one.
And shout out for Oregon scheduling these challenge games and getting teams to come to Matthew Knight. Baylor last year, now Houston this year. So shout out to scheduling those kind of challenge games early on in the season. All right. We have reached that point of the podcast where I turn over hosting duties to our guy, Shane, for good old Duckgenerate Corner.
All right. Here we go. Justin, you and I have some work to do. Zach?
I love to hear it.
Are you aware? Did you keep track of your picks from last week?
No, I didn't. I never do.
So last week, Justin, you and I went 8-6. Not bad. Commendable. If you're gambling, you probably only lost a little bit of money, depending on what the juice is in some of those bets. Zach, you went 12-2.
Oh, woo! Let's go.
Yeah, I
had no idea.
Which is crazy, because Justin, you went 6-6 in the first three games yesterday. And wow. I was like, oh shit. I'm falling way behind. And then it kind of fell off a little bit, obviously.
Then Zach
you hit your last six and then just a couple in between there. So yeah. So that brings our season total. I am at 55-54. Not as bad as I thought I'd be. Justin 56-53, it's holding in there in second
way,
place.
Way better than I thought I would be.
yeah. For somebody who intentionally doesn't gamble as well. Zach 62-47.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. You should be
that's impressive.
Professional sports writer or something. Or get these out there.
You should get gambler.
Get some site to let you write for them or something. That's where
Vegas.
Pac-12 segment for the Ringer Gambling Show. All right, so first game on the docket here, we have Colorado getting 34.5 points after the brutal beating against Oregon. They are going down to LA. They're at USC with an under over of 66.
Can I say something real quick?
Oh yeah.
How come USC gets the sloppy seconds from Oregon every time? I mean, we played Cal. Beat them a lot. USC
beat
gets
Colorado
next week.
Oh, wow.
We played Colorado, beat them up. USC gets them next week. What's going on?
Yeah, that is interesting.
Made these schedules.
Yeah. Well, the Pac-12 just handling everything perfect every time. So,
yeah, I can't. I'm not going to shy away on this one. Give me the Trojans and give me the over. That just feels like a layup.
What's the number again?
36.
34.5.
Oh, yeah, 34.5, and then 66 is the under-over.
I think I'm going to do it.
Ride that Buffalo train. I jumped off. I jumped off.
Colorado in the over.
Yeah.
I don't think USC is as good as a lot of people think they are. They've played nobody this year. I know I always do this. I pull out stats that I don't know are exactly correct. I'm pretty sure they haven't played a top 25 team this year. I think I saw that on Twitter earlier. I know I have to double check it, but regardless of whether that's true or not, they don't have a lot of wins on their schedule that are impressive. And they were in a tight game with Cal last week. I'm not saying that Colorado is going to keep this game even relatively close, but 34? Sure. Why not? Oregon beat them by 39? Yeah, I could see USC beating them by less than that. So yeah, give me Colorado.
So it looks like the USC played Utah while they were ranked and lost to them, obviously. And then they've got two ranked teams on their schedule remaining, with UCLA and Notre Dame now jumping back into the rankings.
Okay. How do you guys feel about Notre Dame storming the field after beating Clemson?
I'm fine.
Like, I'm not somebody who holds like storming the field as like a sacred thing, but it's like you guys were number four preseason.
That's true.
Massive disappointment. And then you beat Clemson. You're like, yeah, fuck. It's like, I think it's like storming the field's like, if you're like a smaller program and you beat a bigger program, that's like the most appropriate time to do it. But if you're like a school that's supposed to be in the college football playoff, like, it's like if Alabama storms the field, they beat like Ole Miss or something.
Not even going to go into it on this one. We'll take too long and we're already running long. So just
let's move it along. Already going
long. Let's move it along. Yeah.
All right. So I went with USC and the under on that one. Probably would have went with Colorado, but they lost that wide receiver kid. Just kind of got beat up against Oregon.
That's true. I didn't think about Tyson.
Yep. Too late. Next game. Arizona State is getting 7.5 points in Pullman against Washington State with an under over of 60.5.
Give me the Sun Devils, baby. And under. Give me the under.
I agree with Justin on that one. I think we all had the under there. How's it 60.5? That's just weird. All right. Next up, Washington Huskies getting 13.5 points at Autzen Stadium against our Oregon Ducks. Under over of, we said it was going to be a lot of points, 72.5.
Oh, wow. My gosh. That number went up.
Mm-hmm.
The prestigious Washington Huskies getting 13 points.
Right. I was hoping you were going to give a different academic number too for the spread. I've seen it anywhere from 9 to 14. So I was curious where you were going to go with that.
I always pull from, let's give him a quick shout out, mybookie.ag, an illegal gambling site out of like Lithuania.
Give me Washington in the over. Ooh. I think this can be a 10 to 12 point game. Yeah, honestly, boomy. I'm mad I said it too, but I still think the Ducks win.
Boomy, yeah. I'm 62-47. What the fuck, you guys? Lighting money on fire. Who cares?
Yeah, give me the Ducks and give me that over. I think the Ducks pull away late, but I think it is kind of a slobber knocker, an offensive slobber knocker there in the first half.
I'm going to go with Oregon, and I'm going to zag a little bit and take the under. It's a nice high total there.
You've taken an under this year.
I know. They finally hit under last week. They did finally hit and under. I feel like sometimes when it's two prolific offenses, the number just rises, and then it kind of becomes like a staring contest early, and then you can kind of see that number fall. That's my prediction here. I'm also thinking that Oregon's going to be a backdoor cover. I think that it's going to be tight up until late. Next game here, the Cal Bears are getting 13.5 in Corvallis at Washington State. It's an under over of a measly little 49 points.
Oregon State.
At yep. Oregon State. Yeah.
What did I say?
He said Washington State.
Sure did.
JD and I were just like, what? Neutral site game.
Been playing Corvallis. It's, you know, it makes sense.
Yeah, at a stadium that's not finished.
Fuck it. Give me the Beavs, but give me the under. That's two anemic offenses.
What was the over under?
49.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm still taking the under.
So low. Give me the Beavers and the over.
All right. I'm agreeing with Zach on that one. So I'm already counting that as a victory. Boom. I don't think we have to talk about that anymore. Next up, we have Stanford getting 24 at Utah. Under over a 53.
Utah and the over. I think they just roll.
Yeah, I think so too. Utah and the over.
Uh-oh. That means we all agree. So if you're listening, go ahead and parlay Stanford and the under. Next up, we have Arizona. This is an interesting line, I thought. Arizona is getting 19.5 at UCLA with an under over of 77.5.
Oh my God.
Yeah, give me the Wildcats. I think that the fighting Jed Fishes. And give me the under. That's a huge number.
Yeah, give me UCLA in the under.
I went with Arizona in the under. I don't see this one being like a major shootout the way they have it kind of listed here with the number. Because even with 77 and a half,
insane number.
Yeah, 77 and a half, even 19 and a half, they're still saying Arizona's going to score a decent amount of points. So
UCLA
interesting
has a good defense too. Mm-hmm.
I mean, those wide receivers.
I feel like I'm
play,
missing but something.
Yeah. I think it's just Chip Kelly being involved just puts like an extra 6 points on the under over.
Yeah. That's
just because people just must bet that number up, I'm guessing would be. And then I threw in a bonus one to give us hopefully a little bit of chance to catch up to Zach. Alabama coming off of a loss, laying 12 at Ole Miss, under over 63 and a half.
The Lane Kiffin versus Saban Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Fuck it. Give me Ole Miss. Even though Alabama's going to be angry. But yeah, give me the over.
Yeah, I got Alabama in the over. I want to find that stat because I'm tired of throwing out stats that I'm not sure are completely true. I saw an insane stat yesterday that I need to read to you guys. And it won't take me too long to find it, I promise.
I got Ole Miss and the under in this one. I think that Bama is in an interesting spot. They don't lose like this too often. They haven't had a season like this since like 2010. So I think that, Nick Saban's not like captain fucking optimism. And I think that they might hit a little bit of a spiral here. I'm not saying they lose, but I think that it might be a tight game.
Yeah, I think it might be a close
sneak
game.
This one out, especially wherever Ole Miss plays. I mean, none of those SEC places are, fun to be at.
Oxford?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oxford.
Yeah.
All right, you guys ready for this?
Yeah, go.
According to Chris Felica with ESPN, Saturday will be Alabama's 164th game since the start of 2011. It will be the first time that they are playing a regular season game without having a chance to make it to the national title.
That's fucking crazy.
Only twice since 2011 has Alabama taken the field without a chance to win the national title. Both of them were in 2013 and 2019 bowl games. Wow. That's insane.
Well, and honestly, they still have better CFP odds than Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Do they?
Yeah.
Well, after How's they lost possible? Last week.
Yeah, I saw it this morning. Well, I mean, it's on ESPN, so who knows? But
then I guess they're just counting that Oregon is going to lose. There's no way Alabama gets in.
Never say no.
They're literally counting that everybody in front of them is going to lose.
Never say with the season that we've had. So never count Alabama out unless they have like four losses. You never know. All right, let's go ahead and jump to our last take, our hottest take here at the end of the podcast. Shane, what do you got for us?
Shit.
I feel like I'm in the same boat. I kind of forgot about this. We got all we're talking about.
Here, it's in the old notepad. Here we go. Early candidate for most improved player on the Oregon football team, I'm going to throw out to Patrick Herbert. I have really enjoyed him the past couple weeks, and he has far surpassed what I thought he was going to be. He was a four-star coming out of Sheldon. I thought some of that was kind of the little brother nudge that some of the recruits get, and I thought he was going to get lost in the shuffle, especially early in this year with Ferguson and Montevau and some of these guys and how skilled that they were. And he kind of found a role as like the team's fullback when needed, but he's also been like a fairly prolific pass catcher. And it's cool to see the team really rally around him too. He looks like he is a big time locker room guy. And of all the players that I kind of thought would get lost in the shuffle and forgotten about, I think that it's fair noting that he's having had himself a hell of a season so far.
I like it. All right, Zach, what do you got for us?
This isn't so much as a take, but rather something very interesting I saw at USA Today, the college sites. We have a weekly Heisman poll where everyone votes on their, first, second, third Heisman ballots. Look at who is in number one this week. Mr. Bo Nix himself.
Wow.
So, that's kind of a more reactionary poll than, the real ones, because we look at how everyone played, and Hendon Hooker and CJ Stroud didn't have great games. Bo Nix did. So he is in the number one spot according to that poll, which I thought was just very interesting, at least.
Which inches him just ever so slightly closer to being inducted into the prestigious
Yes, it does.
Flock Pod Hall of Fame. Because I was told if he won the Heisman, he'd be an automatic in. I was told this is on tape. We can go back. I think it was like episode 117.
Check the tape. No, you're right. You're right. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Kids playing well, very well. I got a couple here. I got one kind of just off the rails one. And then how about them Seahawks? The NFC is in absolute shambles.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Good talking. see you next week.
Shelby Harris playing well. I mean, how about them Seahawks, man? I got to say that.
And then, how did this come from?
Are you using Geno Smith as the fifth highest MVP odds?
As he should, sir. As he should, playing his ass off. And then another one, just because we know I am the resident geek here of the podcast. No, if you guys aren't watching Andor right now on Disney Plus, you are just missing out some of the best TV.
You are like,
seriously though. There's JD. I mean, not a single lightsaber in the show. Just great television. Great.
You're like the eighth person to tell me to watch that show.
It's so good. It's so good. Tony Gilroy is in his bag and great acting by Diego Luna. What's his name? Andy Serkis pulling out, you know, great cameo. So yeah, just absolutely phenomenal television. You guys got to check it out. I'm off you guys. I'm not going to convince you guys, but get the listeners out there on that Andor train.
And as always, take care of your kids.
All right. Take care of your chicken. Take care of your mentals. We appreciate you. We love you. We out. That was perfect.
Sorry.
Do you want to dance?
Huh?
Do you want to dance?
Yeah.
You know you make me wanna shout. Kick my heels up and shout. Throw my hands up and shout. Throw my head back and shout. Come on now. Don't forget to say you will. Don't forget to say
a little bit louder now.
Now wait a minute.
Go Ducks!
Go Ducks!
You've been so good to me. You know you make me wanna
shout.
Lift my head up and
shout.
Throw my hands back and
shout.
Come on now.
Shout.
Come on now.
Shout.
Come on now.
Shout.
Come on now.
Shout.
Take it easy.
Shout.
Take it easy.
Shout.
Take it easy.
Shout.
Take it easy.
Shout.
A little bit softer now.
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 Shout.